You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast, episode 34 now, coming up on half 100 here, not too far off. I can't believe that. I am Zach Folador, here with my co-host, as always, Sam Thielman. Sam, how you doing today, man?
It's been pretty good. Great Ball State win that we may talk about later, and it's just been rolling ever since.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, I was telling you before we started recording here, I forgot that game started so early in the afternoon today. I checked my phone, it was halftime, and Ball State was 11 for 16 from three-point land. I was like, man, if they could only bottle that up and do that every game, you know, it'd be easy. But anyway, we got a lot to get to here tonight. There's been, obviously, basketball is the main story right now. We've had some other sports that have started up here over the last week or so, Sam. And if we want to jump right into the news here, let's start off with that. The first weekend of college baseball opened up here this past weekend.
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting week, as you mentioned, opening weekend. We'll start off with the main series that I think everybody wants to talk about. Ball State at Arizona. Game one, Arizona got it. But game two and game three, Ball State got it. Game four, Arizona came back with a win. So solid performance out of Ball State to get 2 out of 4 wins.
Yeah, I agree. I think anytime you can go on the road against a Pac-12 opponent and split the series, I think that's a heck of a start for the Cardinals for this year. MAC Defensive Player of the Year, Chase Sebi, kept the Cardinals close in that game. In the first game. And then in the third game there, in the second game, Ball State won that game 8-7 in 11 innings. And they got the video embedded in the Hustle Belt in the weekend recap article that I'm looking at here. Arizona game was tied at 7. Arizona had a man on third. They tried to steal home to win the game. And Ball State, obviously, you know, they got it. They threw the guy out at home, ended up winning that game 8-7. I tell you what though, Sam, I mean, you go on the road to open the season against a Pac-12 team in their home ballpark and take 2 out of 4. That's a pretty encouraging start for the Cardinals.
I agree. Going on the road to a ranked opponent, nonetheless, yeah, is very impressive. I mean, it's a great win. I think I would have been happy with one win, but two wins is even better. And I saw Ball State after game, I think it was 2 or 3, was ranked 30th. So I don't know whether after game four that changed. So it's a great weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. And Ball State right there with Central Michigan at the top of the conference right now. And another team that had a nice start to the season this weekend was the Miami Redhawks. And they went down to Florida and swept Jacksonville.
Yeah, game one through three, as you mentioned, sweep 4-1. Game one, game two, 8-4, and game three, 5-2. Nothing really you could more ask for Miami than getting the sweep and just dominating Jacksonville.
Yeah, no doubt. And Miami's bullpen was really the star of the weekend there. Redhawks relief arms combined to throw 14.1 innings, only 2 earned runs in that span and 17 strikeouts. So certainly a strong start for the Redhawks. There's a lot of games here, so I don't think we have to go in depth on all of them here, Sam, but you know, Ohio struggled a little bit as we thought they might with the new interim coach. They went down to Virginia, took on Radford, and the Highlanders took 2 out of 3 from the Bobcats there, unfortunately. I was a little bit disappointed, if I'm being honest here, Sam, with, you know, Central Michigan. This is a team picked preseason favorite in the conference. They were ranked, I believe, as 35th in the preseason top 50 poll. They went down to Texas and got themselves swept.
Yeah, I mean, when you're losing not only one game, but get swept in a series, it's definitely disheartening. As you mentioned, defending MAC champions, projected to win the whole thing. It's very disappointing to lose against a team I'm not really much familiar how good Texas A&M Corpus Christi is, but if you at least got to win one of those three if I'm a Central Michigan player.
Yeah, and I think if you know, even just looking at the box score here, it seems like offense was the problem for the Chippewas this weekend. Only 7 runs combined in the 3 games. It is pretty crazy though. Just another example of how crazy 2020 and 2021 has been with COVID and the pandemic and all this. If you guys recall last week on the show, we were talking about how Central Michigan was set to go down to Texas and play Stephen F. Austin for their opening series. They got down to Texas, and Stephen F. Austin was in a region of Texas where, you know, they were missing power. Obviously the weather last week was not very conducive to outdoor activity and baseball. So while they were in Texas, they had to scrap the series against Stephen F. Austin, find someone else to play. Thankfully, Texas A&M Corpus Christi had an open weekend, and they were able to take on the Chippewas. I think if you're a Chippewas, obviously you would have liked to win at least one of those games. And then another series that I was honestly surprised that even happened at all was Kent State and Virginia Tech, Sam. Although I'm not surprised, you know, Golden Flashes go down to Blacksburg against an ACC opponent, and they weren't able to get a victory down there, which, even though I know Kent State's picked towards the top of the conference, that didn't surprise me too much.
Yeah, but one game I want to mention real quick before we move on to basketball is the Ohio-Radford series, because as we talked about last week, their coach just resigned. So I thought it was a very encouraging side to go to Radford, a very high quality opponent, and at least get one, but they got one game at Radford. So very encouraging signs from them.
Yeah, for sure. And that certainly, if you're coach Craig Moore, interim coach Craig Moore there, I think you're always encouraged to get that first victory and kind of get that pressure off your shoulders. So it'll certainly be interesting to see the Bobcats and follow them throughout this season as we, we'll see how they do. They were picked 6th, I believe, in the preseason poll. So kind of a middle of the pack team. We'll see if they're able to rise above that. But I mentioned briefly there, Kent State went down to Virginia Tech and they lost 2 games there to the Hokies, 3-1 and 9-2. That went from a 3-game series spread out over the weekend to a doubleheader on Sunday because of weather. And then, man, Sam, I tell you what, we've talked a lot about Toledo in a positive light here over the last couple months because of the men's basketball team and how well they've been playing. But the Rockets baseball team, man, I tell you what, they went down to South Carolina this weekend and they got themselves smacked around a little bit.
Game 1, I mean, it just tells you 2-14. Yeah. Game 2, 1-5. And then game 3, they put up quite a fight, 6-7. But, I mean, 2-14. Yeah, there's not much positives you could take away from that.
No, it wasn't. And as a team, I mean, if you're looking at the offensive side of the stat sheet here, I mean, across 3 games, they struck out 44 times and they hit only 212. And of their 21 total hits in the series, 12 of them came in the last game on Sunday. So Maybe those offensive form from that last game will carry forward into next weekend in the season as it continues. But certainly not the start you were hoping for if you are a Rockets baseball fan. So as the season progresses, everyone, you know, we'll talk more about baseball. Obviously, at this point right now, especially with it being, you know, we're 2 weeks away from the conference tournaments and basketball, I still think most of our focus is going to be on basketball, but we'll get more into baseball and softball and all these other spring sports as these seasons progress a little bit. Moving on, Sam, we got some hoops news, a couple of milestones that were broken here over the last week in men's and women's hoops. And we'll start off first with someone who we talked about last week with Oshlyn Brown. She became the second basketball player in women's basketball history at Ball State to break the 1,000-point, 1,000-rebound mark. And she broke another milestone just earlier tonight, Sam.
She became the career rebounding leader for Ball State women's basketball, who are currently playing against Northern Illinois, I believe, as we record this episode. So we'll have to see how that turns out. 1,029 for Oshlyn Brown, really impressive. As you mentioned, second Ball State women's player to record 1,000 rebounds. And she also recorded, she's one of the very few to also have 1,000 points and 1,000 rebounds. So very, very, very high achieving a career, I guess you would say. Definitely deserving, and I'm sure she'll keep racking up those rebounding leaders because she's still got more games left.
Yeah, certainly. And as we record this, as Sam mentioned, they're playing Northern Illinois right now. Cardinals currently up 41-40 on the Huskies in the third quarter of that game. But yeah, I mean, Sam, we talked about Oshlyn Brown last week and the longevity she's had and the consistency she's had. I don't think we need to rehash all of that, but I think this is just another testament to those things that we talked about last week in terms of, you know, be having an impact on the team for multiple years now, going back all the way to her freshman season. I mean, she's been a pillar of the program, and this is just another, a great milestone to kind of put a cap on a great career. So congrats to Oshlyn. A similar story coming out of Mount Pleasant here tonight, as Michaela Kelly hit a pretty big career milestone for the Chippewas, Sam.
Yeah, you kind of talked about pillars, which Oshlyn Brown, I think you could say the same as Michaela Kelly, 2,000 career points. I think there's a debate whether to be had whether 1,000 points and 1,000 rebounds is more impressive or 2,000 career points, but that's for other people to decide. But Zach, I kind of had this thought in my mind. Is it that these players are just better offensively, or is the defense just that bad that there's so many 1,000 point scores this season? Because Justin Turner, you think of who else has scored?
I mean, Daquan Plowd and
We'll talk about Ish. We'll talk about Ish a little bit later.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the ball, Michaela Kelly and Oshlyn Brown come to mind.
CeCe Hooks, we talked about.
CeCe Hooks. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I hear what you're saying. And I do think, in a general sense, you know, basketball continues to get more and more offensive oriented, right? Over the years, just like football, you know, they've made it harder to play defense because people have realized that offense and scoring is exciting, and it, you know, it sells tickets and it brings people into the arenas. So I don't disagree. I do think that, I think it's, they've made it easier for offensive players to get their numbers. Certainly. I also, you know, I don't think that takes anything away from Michaela Kelly or anyone else. That's, I mean, scoring 2,000 points is still no small feat. So I'm sure Michaela would have preferred to maybe get a win tonight. We'll talk a little bit more about that here later in the show. I'm sure she would have preferred the win, but still nonetheless, like, she has been, you know, we talk about Oshlyn Brown being a pillar for Ball State. I mean, Michaela Kelly is another senior that has been with Central Michigan this year, you know, obviously her fourth year. She was an MAC all freshman team selection in 2017-18, voted the all MAC tournament team that year. I mean, this is another example of a player who has been consistent, that has been, you know, just been a really just a presence for the Chippewas for a long time. I mean, you even go back to her freshman year, 2017, 2018, she stepped right into the starting lineup and played 31 minutes a game for the Chippewas there. So, you know, this is someone that, you know, every single year she's been in college, she's averaged double digit points. Even as a freshman, she was, you know, scoring 11.5 points a game. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. It's just like we talked about last week with all these other players that have hit these milestones. I mean, there's, you're not going to do it unless you're contributing and you know, playing significant minutes as a freshman.
Yeah. And before we get into the kind of in-depth talk, Ishmael Amin, as I mentioned earlier, reached 1,000 career points like we've seen with the other players. The four-year starter for Ball State finally hit 1,000 career points.
Yeah, which another example of just another, you know, I feel like kind of like a broken record. I keep talking about how these players are kind of pillars of the program, but you don't get to these milestones if you're not. I mean, Ish is a guy. Here's another guy. He's a senior that has really really broken out for the Cardinals here over the last couple of years. And you love to see someone like this that puts in the hard work, that's works hard, keeps his head down, is kind of a leader on the team, and he comes out and gets to do this. I mean, really, I feel like Ish's breakout year was maybe a little bit later in his career. I mean, he was second on the team last year and scoring just under 14 points a game. You know, you look at his freshman and sophomore seasons, You know, he had some injury issues, especially with his sophomore year where he missed, I think it was like 13 or 14 games in the middle of the season, only averaged about 7 points a game as a sophomore. But nonetheless, I think coming back from that and having these two solids, you know, obviously breaking out last year as a junior and then following that up with another strong season this year was you'd like to see someone like him get a milestone like this.
And you have to think, if any of these players return, how many more points they'll be able to score, because you return for another season. Yeah. How many more points can you score in that time? Because Justin Turner has that decision in May. Ish, of course, has that. KJ Walton also on Ball State. Ashlyn Brown, Michaela Kelly. All these players have to make the decision whether they want to come back for another year.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point that you make, Sam. And it's something that we talked about in football, but it's not something that we've talked about quite as much in basketball. And I think that is going to be something really interesting to monitor here after the season ends, is how many of these current seniors are going to take advantage and come back for another year, because the option is obviously on the table. You wonder, you know, some of these folks are going to want to try and play professionally. And for the folks that think they might not get that chance this year, why not come back and run it back one more time? That's going to be really interesting. And I think it'll be even more, I don't know, in basketball, the numbers aren't quite there, right? I mean, you don't have, you know, 50 or however many scholarships. I mean, you got, you know, 10 or 11, 12 people on scholarship. So you got, you know, coaches out there recruiting freshmen to come in for next year, where some of these seniors might want to stick around for another year. That's going to be a really interesting dynamic to watch as we get to the off season.
I agree. And it's going to be exciting to see, but Zach, I mean, we still got a whole nother before we talk about them returning or not, we still got the rest of the year to talk about.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. I'm getting ahead of myself here. And with that said, I think that's a perfect transition, Sam. Let's move right into the hoops talk proper.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Obviously, we kicked off last week's hoop segment by talking about how a few teams have clinched on both sides of the fence, with Toledo and Akron and on the men's side, Central Michigan and Bowling Green on the women's side. The only update to that this week is that Kent State did clinch on the men's side. So we have three teams that are locked into Cleveland now on the men's side, still only Central Michigan and Bowling Green in women's. So that's kind of a testament to how close things are there in the middle of the pack on the women's side. But let's go ahead and kick off our discussion here tonight, Sam, by just taking a look at the standings and, you know, where we would be if the MAC tournament started today. Why don't we start on the men's side today? What are you kind of seeing when you look at the standings right now as we think about the conference tournament coming up in a couple of weeks?
I'm looking at these matchups and I'm pretty excited. I mean, when you have a exciting matchup that I think could present in a 1-8 seed, I think that just tells you what the rest of the seeding kind of tells you. Toledo, Ball State already beat Toledo. You still have a Bowling Green who's still trying to figure things out, but they seems to kind of have turned around a corner. They will have to project it right now to play Kent State. So from what I'm seeing, I'm really liking what I'm seeing. I think we could have some really interesting matchups come March.
I agree with you. And for the most part, I think these matchups held up from last week. Mm-hmm. And I continue, I'll say it again. I said it last week. We both said it last week. And I'll say it again, is that 4-5 matchup there between Ohio and Buffalo, that's one that I have circled. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one if it happens. Same thing with Kent State Bowling Green. If I'm being honest, you know, if I'm one of the other 11 teams in the MAC right now, I want no part of Bowling Green. You know, they've won three in a row after that extended losing streak. They seem to have figured things out. So certainly, you know, there's certainly some opportunities there, and certainly going to be some excellent matchups. The 2-7 matchup there would be Akron and Miami. The Red Hawks have won two in a row, got back to 500 in the conference, at sitting at 7-7. What about on the women's side, Sam? We had some interesting matchups this week, some interesting results this week. Bowling Green still, though, continues to impress, sitting there on top at the one seed. And then you look at, Ball State, we talked about the parity here on the women's side, Sam. Bowling Green at first place at 12-3. Ball State in eighth place at 9-7. They're in eighth place, but they're only 3.5 games out of first. This women's side here, the 1-8, it's so close.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to decide who you really want, because the difference between 2 and 3, Ohio and Central Michigan, to Northern Illinois and Eastern Michigan, there's not much difference. So if you're going into the tourney thinking you want one team or another, you can figure out matchups wise, but it's not going to be as easy as in past years.
Yeah, I agree. And all of these matchups on the women's side are intriguing to me. Ball State Buffalo is the 1-8. Ball State Bowling Green as the 1-8. But I was kind of getting ahead of myself there, because I wanted to mention Buffalo here. Buffalo is a team that we've talked about all year as one of the three, maybe four best in the conference. And they're sitting at 9-6 now. And all of a sudden you look at the standings and they've fallen all the way back to seventh. That's even with potential conference player of the year, Diasha Fair, on their team. To have her, to have them be in seventh place right now is crazy. Because I think that's a team where you could legitimately look at Buffalo and say, I think they're going to win the conference tournament. And you wouldn't be crazy to think that. And yet here they are in seventh place.
Yeah, but it all comes down to, because you have to win basically, what is it, three games to win it all four?
With it being eight teams, yeah, it would be three games you'd have to win it all.
Do you think, as good as Diasha Fair is, to put it all on her three straight games? Obviously she's a great player, but is it going to be good enough to win three straight games? It would have to be Kent State, let's say Central Michigan or Eastern Michigan, and then let's say Bowling Green. Do you think she could power her team enough to beat all those teams?
It's a great point, Sam. It's a great point. And I don't think as great as she is, I don't think you can put that on one player, especially when the games are on back-to-back-to-back days. When you look at Ohio has CeCe Hooks and Erica Johnson. Central Michigan, they do great. They're great on defense. Bowling Green, great defense and rebounding. Buffalo, you can't rely on one player the whole time. And it's not to say that they don't have other players that can't step up. But Diasha Fair, it seems like every week we talk about her because of the stat lines that she puts up. So there are some other players on the team. McEvans can do some things. She had 14 points the other night against Kent State. I think you're right, though. I think they might be a little bit too dependent on Diasha Fair to be able to make the whole way home and get to the NCAA tournament.
Zach, I think this is a perfect transition to the first game, Buffalo Ball State.
Yeah, we talking about Diasha Fair and Buffalo. They got a big win on the road in Muncie on Saturday. That was after Ball State, just before that, had beaten them in Buffalo. So it was kind of a back-to-back type of thing. Ball State won the game in Buffalo by 13. Turnaround, Buffalo comes down to Muncie and wins by 7. And as we mentioned, Sam, Diasha Fair, 36 points in this one, 11 for 23 from the field. You had Heather Hall had 16 in this game, and Kara McEvans had 12. But 36 of your 83 points are coming from one player. Certainly makes for a great performance, Sam, but I don't think it's sustainable.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the encouraging sign for Ball State here is you had other players other than Ashlyn Brown really step up. And I think if you can continue that through tonight, if they end up getting the win to later games, because I think they have probably like 4 or 5 games left, that's going to be encouraging. But yeah, as you say, it's nice to have one player you can put 30 plus points on a night, but at the same time, it's kind of a curse. So like, you have to depend on that person to score basically a third of your points each night.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, the stat line for Dash Affair in this game, I mean, 36 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 steals. It's unbelievable. I didn't realize this, Sam, but she's currently 6th in the entire nation in scoring in 24.8 points per game. She also ranks in the top 25 in free throws, assists, steals, field goals made, 3-point field goals made, and points overall. That's a heck of a list there that she's included in. So really, really. And then you think about the fact that she's only a sophomore. I mean, this is a player that if she, you know, continues to develop at this pace, I could see, you know, future potential All-American on our hands here with Dyasha Fair. The fact that she's putting up numbers like this in the top 10 in points per game in the entire country as a sophomore. So shout out to her. I think even if Buffalo doesn't get to the tournament this year, they certainly have a bright future with her on the roster. The other two games, I guess, to talk about kind of in tandem here, Sam, that I was really intrigued by this week was the back-to-back Kent State Northern Illinois matchups this weekend, making up for a postponed game earlier in the year. As I talked about last week, this is a really weird scheduling quirk because of COVID, where they're not only are they playing back-to-back days, but they're playing both games in DeKalb. Obviously, in a normal year, one of these games would have been at Kent. So you got the Kent State Golden Flashes, who are coming off of a 3-game losing streak. They got to go play at Northern Illinois back-to-back days against probably the hottest team in the conference. One of the hottest teams in the conference. They were 9-3 overall in the conference. I believe they had won 8 of 9. And Kent State finds a way to win both games, Sam. Really, really impressive performance from the Golden Flashes for me this weekend.
Yeah, I think I made the statement last week that they had to win at least one of these two because Kent State was kind of falling after their month break. And shout out to them for being able to get it done. Not only that, being able to find a depth of score, not just Neil Blackford, having not just Shoemate, having other scores than them two, because I think Northern Illinois struggled because they didn't have is Shelby Coker, correct?
That's right. You got it.
Yeah, score all their points, and that's what's ultimately going to do you like Buffalo if you can't have your leading scorers put up 20 to 30.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the thing that was most impressive for me this weekend with Kent State was their defense. I mean, this is a team, you know, you're going up against Northern Illinois, who has routinely put, you know, 80 points on the board, set high 70s, low 80s on the board over the course of the season this year. You hold them to 58 points on Sunday, 65 in the first game on Saturday. You combine these two games together, Northern Illinois only shot 38% from the field, only 29% from the three-point line. So, you know, Kent State, they're not always going to outscore you. They aren't one of the better offensive teams in the conference, but they have that calling card of defense where even if they're not going to outscore you, you know that they're going to get stops. And I didn't expect Kent State to win either of these two games this weekend just because of how they were playing and how Northern Illinois was playing. But after getting these two back-to-back victories, I think Kent State's right back in the thick of things now. They've moved all the way back up to third place. They're now sitting at 8-4. And, you know, their next game, they're playing Miami on Saturday, which Miami's currently sitting at 2-15 in the conference. So you'd like to think if you're a Kent State fan that you can pick up another win there. So a really nice turnaround here in the making, a potential turnaround in the making for the Golden Flashes, as you know, they also followed up their victories on over the weekend with a win earlier today at home against Buffalo. So they're now 9-4 in the conference, having won 3 in a row. So certainly a nice turnaround here for the Golden Flashes.
I agree, and it's weird the ebbs and flows that Kent State's having. They have their highs of first, they kind of slow down to second, then they fall all the way down to seventh place. It was, I believe, like just a week ago.
Yeah.
And now two to three games later, they're back in second place, and that honestly has to do with winning percentage. But it's just crazy how just highs and lows Kent State's program has had this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's, I think it's just that been that kind of year for everyone. So, Big shout out to Kent State though for getting two, or I guess now three, big victories this week, including the game against Buffalo earlier today. And then the last game I wanted to talk about here on the women's side, Sam, was another one happened earlier tonight on Wednesday. This was one that really surprised me, Sam. Toledo has been struggling this year. You know, they're coming into this game. They were 5-11 in the conference. They had lost, 7 of 8 coming into this game, with their only win being at Toledo, at Akron, who's really struggling. So you have, you know, you lose 7 of 8, you go on the road to Central Michigan, who's a team still in the hunt for the one seed in the conference, sitting at, you know, coming into this game, they're 11-5 in the league. Rockets though, come out firing, outscore the Chippewas 22-7 in the first quarter of this game, and they hang on to win 72-67, a really, really impressive win for the Rockets here tonight.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody would have had money on this game if they would have put it on Toledo, but hey, yeah. I mean, it would surprise me. I mean, just the shock value it added to the season, because I don't think anybody outside of Toledo's program probably would have expected this win. Like, let's be honest, I don't think any Toledo fan was expecting to go to Mount Pleasant and grab a win. And good for Toledo, and it provides some exciting basketball, exciting events. And this game might bite Central Michigan in the butt a little bit later in the season, depending on how seeding falls.
Yeah, you're right. This is going to be one I think that the Chippewas will want back. A nice night, you know, Quenisha Loggett with 12 points for the Rockets, Sophie Ward with 15. And, you know, like I said, it's been a tough year for Toledo. Having, you know, they're sitting at 10-11 overall, 6-11 now in the conference, but that's a very nice win for them tonight. And they have, 4 games left, one against Eastern Michigan, 2 against Western Michigan, and then 1 against Ball State. So they're currently sitting in 10th place there, but they're 3.5 games back of Ball State for that 8th spot. So it'll be tough. I think if they want to make the conference tournament, you got to try and win these last 4 games. Obviously that starts with the Ball State game on Saturday, which, given the implications, I guess could be big for both teams. You know, if you're Ball State, you don't want to give Toledo any hope. And if you're Toledo though, that's a game you have to win if you have aspirations of making the conference tournament.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So let's go ahead and move on to the men's side of the fence here, Sam. Before we, you know, look at the week ahead and our, you know, performances of the week and stuff like that. A couple really, really big results here, a couple surprising results here in the men's side of things this week. Let's start off with Toledo, though. This is a team, you know, we talked about last week. They kind of hit that bump in the road where they lost 2 in a row to Ball State and to Bowling Green. But they've seemed to have turned it back around here. They, you know, early, you know, later last week, I should say, with that victory at home against Ohio. The game that really impressed me, though, you go on the road to Buffalo, who is a team that we've talked about, you know, their inconsistencies. But you go to Buffalo and you pull out a 10-point victory over the Bulls, 80-70, a really nice win for the Rockets. Marion Jackson was great as always, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Ryan Rollins with 18 points for the Rockets as well. A nice team victory for Toledo, Sam.
Yeah, I agree. This is a Buffalo team, just for reference, that just beat Northern Illinois, I believe, just either a day or two ago by like 20. So to get a 10-point win in Buffalo, when I think this Buffalo team, like I said, is a lot better than their record. Toledo, I think this just shows how just kind of separation that Toledo is. Like, we don't want to say it, but I think we can all see that this Toledo team is not only built for the regular season, but built in the postseason. Because unlike the teams we talked about who's only had one score, they have 5, 6, 7 on any given night. So really solid win for Toledo. And Buffalo, it's a hard loss to take, but I mean, it's not surprising considering how well Toledo has played.
I agree. I'm not surprised, first of all, because of how good Toledo has been, but also Buffalo just continues to underwhelm me. You know, we've talked about it a lot. This is a team that, you know, they shot 14% from 3-point land in this game, 67% from the free throw line. You got Josh Mbala, a guy that we have talked about a lot on this show that is capable of putting up these crazy stat lines. You know, he finishes this game with 9 points on 3 for 13 from the field. Buffalo, just for the amount of talent that they have, it seems like they just have these games where their offense doesn't show up or they can't get a stop. And I don't think, I don't know, I feel like I'm not saying anything that we haven't said before, Sam, but I don't think there's any way that Buffalo should be 7-5 in the MAC. I mean, this is a team that has way more talent, or I'm sorry, they're 8-5 now. But nonetheless, this is a team that if you would have asked me through 13 games what their record would be, I would have guessed, you know, 10-3, 11-2. I don't think anyone expected them to struggle like they have throughout this year.
I agree. And I think what Buffalo needs to do, like any good team really does, is have someone come off the bench. And that's not to say that Ronald Segu should go off the bench, because he's obviously starter quality, but you need to switch things up. You need to provide somebody some energy off the bench, because you're not getting that out of playing three players and their combined is 11 points. You're not getting that. Toledo at least has one person, Kalen Saunders, who can come in and shoot the ball. Buffalo needs to do really the same, whether it's put Jonathan Williams like as a six man, have Ronald Segu as a six man, because what you're doing works at times, but against these good teams just seems to kind of underwhelm.
That is a good point, Sam. I think there's a lot. There is definitely something to be said for kind of having someone that can give you that spark off the bench if your starting five doesn't have it, or whatever the case may be, someone that can come in and make a shot in a pinch and kind of get the team rolling. I do tend to agree with you there. And it does kind of seem like, I don't know. I don't know if Buffalo has that guy right now. So again, the Bulls currently fifth in the MAC, sitting at 8-5 in the conference overall. Their next game, they've taken on Central Michigan. They go to Ohio this weekend, which will certainly be a big game for, you know, with seeding implications for the conference tournament there. Next game I wanted to touch on here, Sam, I don't know, this seems like it might be becoming a theme for Ball State, is, you know, they come out, they play really well in the first half, and then they just kind of fade down the stretch. This time it was with Akron. You know, Cardinals take a 36-30 halftime lead, and they give up 58 points to the Zips in the second half of this game. Sam, what did you see in this one?
I mean, it's just a theme throughout the season. Even with today's game against Kent State, it was a strong first half, and they didn't really need a strong second half to really finish things up, because they had a pretty tremendous lead. But the point remains is they come out strong. They can hang tough with anybody. Toledo, Bowling Green, Akron in the first half, Buffalo in the first half, and then second half comes around, and it just slips away. Their defense looks lackluster. It's just not there in a second half. And for me personally, for them to get things going, it's going to start with Jerron Coleman. I've said it earlier in the season. It was the reason why Ball State did so well today. Jerron Coleman's got to be that leader step up, because Ish is always going to score. Brocken's always going to score. Myron Thomas is going to be scored. But the one person that needs to lead this team is Jerron Coleman moving forward.
Yeah, now – obviously, Jerron Coleman didn't have the opportunity to be as much of a factor in this game against Akron because of foul trouble. You know, he had 4 fouls in this game, only finished with 8 points and 2 rebounds. As a Ball State fan, is that rare for him, or does, I don't know. I don't know enough about him specifically. Like, does he get in foul trouble a lot?
It's not more of him. It's more the forwards. I would say, I think it's just, I think he's a person that doesn't like to think of him. Like, I don't know the program. I'm not inside the program. It seems to me like Ish and KJ want the ball in their hand. It seems like at times Jerron just kind of plays a backseat to them at times when he should be pressing the issue, because I think he personally, Ish is the best shooter out there. KJ is the best finisher. I think Jerron Coleman's like hands down the best all-around kind of athlete, passer, shooter, just all-around. Myron Thomas is the best dunker, but I would say Jerron Coleman's the best kind of all-around player that just needs to be more involved.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you know, you look at this game and offense was not the issue here. I mean, you score 79 points, you shoot 48% from the field, 38% from three. I mean, you score 79 points, you're going to win a decent amount of basketball games. But then you look at the other side. I mean, you let Akron shoot 52%, 45% from three. the thing that's crazy to me is that, you know, Akron puts up 88 points in this game, 58 points in the second half. We've talked a lot about how we kind of feel sometimes how Akron can turn into like a one man show where it's like Lauren Christian Jackson has to like drag the team along with him. He only had 12 points in this game. He was 2 for 12 from the field. So Ball State did a good job on him defensively, but they let some of these other guys beat him. You know, Brian Trimble Jr. had 19. He was 5 for 8 from three. Ali Ali had 20. He was 3 for 5 from three. That's, you know, anytime you see Lauren Christian Jackson, you only hold him to 12 points, you'd think you have a good chance to win that game, but they just kind of let everyone else go a little wild, it seems like.
Yeah, I think the one issue on defense was we were so worried about Lauren Christian Jackson, even when he wasn't hitting our shots, that yeah, we sure. just let everybody else take away. Like, you, like after a certain amount of threes, like they were just knocking down back-to-back-to-back threes, you kind of have to shift defenses. Lauren Christian Jackson wasn't really hitting many shots until the end where he'd probably have like 8 free throws because we had a foul. It just wasn't his day. We should have focused on the others. We didn't make the kind of changes, adjustments we needed to, and it hurt us at the end of the day.
Yeah, certainly. And I guess before we move on to the Bowling Green game, I guess let's talk about today's game against Kent State for Ball State, because I tell you what, like, again, offense certainly not the issue here. Ball State puts up 57 points in the first half. Finished the game with, you know, a 90-71 victory over Kent State. 11 for 16, the Cardinals were from the three-point line in the first half. Jerron Coleman, like you mentioned, Sam, 26 points in this one, 8 for 11 from the field, 5 for 8 from three-point land. You are right. I think it seems like even though maybe Ish and KJ Walton get all of the press and are maybe the best, physical, best scorers on the team, it does seem like the team kind of goes as Jerron Coleman goes. When he shows up and is hitting his shots, Ball State is a different team.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the reasons why this team was so special last year with Jerron Coleman being Mac freshman of the year. We had Tajay Teague, obviously, but Jerron Coleman stepped up when we needed to as a freshman. I believe he's getting better and better, including this game where he had a career high 26. He's just another animal when he's getting the ball in his hands and he's being allowed to dictate where this offense goes. And if Ball State doesn't realize that, it's probably going to be an early defeat versus Toledo.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. And, we'll see what happens. Certainly an encouraging sign for Cardinals fans though today. The last game I wanted to talk about here on the men's side, Sam, Bowling Green, it seems like the Falcons might have figured something out here. Now, they didn't start well in this game. They were down 29-12 with, 6.5 minutes left in the first half, but they really turned it on from there, really pulled away in the second half from Eastern Michigan, 82-69. And I got to give you some credit here, Sam. One of the guys that you mentioned last week as needing to step up a little bit in Caden Matheny, for the Falcons, he had himself a career night against Eastern Michigan, 8 for 14 from three-point land, 10 for 16 from the field overall, 29 points for the freshman. Another nice win for Bowling Green. I know, obviously, Eastern Michigan's down at the bottom of the conference. They're 1-9 overall, but Bowling Green now has won 3 in a row. They have some legitimate momentum, it seems like.
Yeah, I agree. And it just – Caden Matheny just makes us – team that much better. This offense that much easier, makes the opponent's defense have to play that much harder, because when you have a three-point threat, you have Justin Turner being able to do what he wants. You have Daquan Platton being allowed to do what he wants, because they're not able to focus on one or two guys. You have a perimeter threat that you basically have to stick on. It just makes Bowling Green's offense that much easier and flow easier. And that's what they need to realize moving forward. Both the Eastern Michigan Ball State win, I have to contribute to Caden Matheny, because he just allowed their offense to flow that much better.
Yeah, I agree with you. And because Matheny was hitting his shots, it didn't so much matter that Justin Turner was having an off night. You know, he was only 4 for 13 from the field. He only had 13 points in this game. Plowden also with only 13 points. And Caleb Fields had 13 as well. You got Trey Diggs with 10 off the bench. But, yeah, Caden Matheny really was the catalyst for Bowling Green to come back in this game. I mean, again, the Falcons were down 29-12. They were down by 17 with 6.5 minutes left to go in the first half. And they cut that all the way to 3 by halftime. And then they took the lead with less, 2 minutes into the second half and just never gave it up. And they were up by 10 for most of the second half. So certainly it seemed like a game where they kind of just flipped the switch after they got down a little bit. But you know, I've said it multiple times, and I'll keep saying it, that if I'm one of the other teams in the conference right now, I want no parts of Bowling Green because they have the talent. It seems like they're figuring it out. It'll be interesting to see, 3 games left here for the Falcons. You got at Akron on Saturday, and then next week you got you're playing Miami at home, and then at Ohio next Friday. So 3 good games to close out the conference schedule here for the Falcons, 2 of them being on the road. I wonder, they're only a half game back of Buffalo for 5th place. They're only a game back of Ohio for 4th place. I could see Bowling Green climbing up the standings a little bit here over the last couple of weeks, Sam.
I do too. And kind of transitioning to the last game I want to talk about, since we didn't get to really talk about Ohio Bowling Green because it was postponed, the Ohio Akron game.
Yeah.
Ohio, I'm not going to lie, I had money on Akron. I thought being down 2 starters, I believe Ohio was, Akron yeah. would easily get the win. That wasn't the case at all. It just was a dominant performance from Ohio from start to finish. I was super impressed by everybody being able to step up. Mark Sears, once again, being able to step up once Preston went down. I love watching Ohio. I love watching them play every single game, no matter who's playing, because they're going to come to play. It doesn't matter if McMurray's getting 20 minutes or whether Sears is getting 40.
Yeah.
They're going to come to play, and it's super fun to watch. And I learned my lesson to never bet against Ohio again.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I think I saw that whenever that line opened up, I saw Ohio was actually favored in that game, which didn't make any sense to me. And then everyone bet on Akron. Akron went to be the favorite. But even still, no matter what the line was, what you bet on, Ohio, I mean, really blew the expectations out of the water for this game. And, I think you're exactly right, Sam. Like, more so than most teams in this conference, where most teams in this conference, it's like 1 or 2 primary players, and then you have a bunch of role players. With Ohio, even though Jason Preston gets a little bit more press, I don't get that sense. Like, the scoring on this team is very balanced. Jason Preston at 16.4, Dwight Wilson at 15.6, Vander Plas at 13, Roderick at 11.8. I mean, your 2 top scorers go down in this game, and you still manage to hang 90 on Akron and shoot 50% from the field. Vander Plas had a great game, 17 points and 9 rebounds. Roderick had a great game with 17 points. This is a very deep team. And I think if I had to pick kind of like a dark horse team that I think might surprise some people and win the conference tournament and get to the NCAA tournament, I think it might be Ohio. Like, they don't have anything or any one person that really like jumps off the screen at you the way that like Justin Turner does or Lauren Christian Jackson does, but they play such connected basketball. They play as a unit on both sides of the floor, and that makes them really fun to watch. I'm with you, Sam. They have really impressed me here, especially over the last couple of weeks.
And for me, I think no flaws really stand out to me in Ohio. Really, you look at the record, 12-6 overall, but they don't have any like major flaws that you can just point out. It's sound fundamental basketball. It's what you want to see if you're a head coach. I love what Jeff Bowles has done there at Ohio. This year has just been so much fun to watch. Like, if like Toledo may have the best all-around shooters and the most depth at shooting, I think Ohio has the most deep team in the MAC.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And, Ohio, 3rd in the conference in points per game right now. They lead the conference in assists per game, which I think is kind of speaks to how well they play as a team. The average, 17.7 assists per game. Not only is that 1st in the MAC, that's 13th in the entire country, 350 Division I basketball team. So, yeah, certainly it's been a good couple of weeks for the Bobcats. They've now won 5 in a row. They have four games left. Their first one up, they got Eastern Michigan and Buffalo here. Their next two at home, finish up the season with a game at Kent State and then versus Bowling Green next Friday. That Bowling Green game next Friday in Athens, that could be a huge game, huge implications for the conference tournament there, Sam. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that game up because I'm with you. You know, Ohio, they have really impressed me here over the last couple of weeks. So let's go ahead and move in now, Sam, to our performances of the week. Obviously as you guys have been, you know how we do this, you've been listening, you know, do one men's, one women's performance of the week. So Sam, why don't you ahead and start it off? What was kind of your standout performance this week on the men's side?
I mean, I think everybody knows who I'm going for, who had kind of the biggest performance of the week. I talked about him last week. He really showed out this week with his 20-plus point, the leading scorer on Bowling Green State's team, and that's Caden Matheny. I think what I said remains true. I think if he can get going each game, this team is close to unstoppable because not only do you have him, you have Turner, you have Plowden. That's the one issue that Bowling Green, I think, couldn't figure out is what was their X factor. And Caden Matheny was him because everybody sees the publicity that Turner and Plowden gets. Turner, I think, is on the watch list, like, for several of them, for several awards. That Matheny's what is the glue that holds this offense together. And the last two games I've watched of him playing Ball State in this past game, it's been a different animal for Bowling Green.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think if he can consistently hit his shots, that completely transforms things for Bowling Green because now, you know, you got another scoring threat you got to worry about. They can't just focus on Turner and Diggs and Plowden. You got, you know, if you got four guys on the floor that can score at any given moment, that changes things. That makes it very hard on the defense. So I'm with you. I think a heck of a game, a career night for the freshman from West Virginia. And I think over the next couple of years, we're going to see a lot of points from him in the orange and brown for the Falcons. For my performance of the week here this week, I went with the team performance of, you know, we just talked about Ohio in their game against Akron the other day. I went with the Bobcats. I don't think I can emphasize enough the what a performance that was. And what a coaching job that was by Jeff Bowles. This is a team that had not played in 21 days because of COVID issues within the program. So you're cold. You haven't played a game in 3 weeks. Your top two scorers are out with Jason Preston and Dwight Wilson. And they still, not only did they win that game against Akron, but they really blew the zips out of the gym. I mean, it was a 9-point game at halftime, but it didn't really seem that close. And then Ohio came out in the second half and just put the pedal to the floor and ran the zips out of the gym. A really, really impressive performance for the Bobcats. I kind of felt like they might fall off here after the long layoff, but if yesterday's game is any indication, that's not the case at all. I'm not betting against the Bobcats right now. They're playing really good basketball and I wouldn't want to see them in Cleveland.
And another reason why I bet them, you mentioned the 21-day layoff. I thought they would have rest. I think we've seen every team that's had that kind of long layoff kind of have a somewhat of a kind of drop off. I mean, Kent State on the women's side comes to mind where they kind of, I think they lost two of the three after their
layoff. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So to me, Zach, I don't know whether you watched that game. It was just I didn't see any rust. It looked like the same Ohio team that came to play in week one. It was just an unbelievable performance, and I can't emphasize enough how much I love watching them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and I agree. There was no rust that was apparent to me. I think a lot of times whenever you have a long layoff like that, I tend to think that that'll show up more on the offensive end, and they did not miss a single beat on offense at this game. I mean, you shoot 49% from the field, 10 for 19 from the 3-point line. You have 17 assists and only 8 turnovers in the game. That's about as good as you can play on offense. And to think that they did that without playing a game for 3 weeks and you put up 90 on one of the best teams in the conference, certainly a statement victory for the Bobcats. And it's been a heck of a coaching job this year from Jeff Bowles and his staff there in Athens. Let's move over to the women's side now, Sam. What was your standout performance of the week for women's hoops in the MAC?
Just straight up Toledo. I mean, this is a moral victory that I think Zach, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they're really going to make the MAC tournament. It's going to be really close, but yeah. I just don't see enough from Toledo to make me buy into their team just yet. It was a moral victory against Central Michigan. I don't think anybody expected it, but it was well-deserved, a great effort by Toledo, and they can take this one into next season a little less sad than they were.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think at this point in the year, it's not much more than a moral victory, but for a team like Toledo that had lost 7 of 8 games, it's good to see a win. And I think this is a team, like you mentioned, Sam, they're 6-11 in the conference. They're sitting in ninth place, 3.5 games back from Ball State. I mean, you're 3.5 games back with 4 games left in the season. Very, very unlikely at this point, I think, that they make the conference tournament. But nonetheless, this is a team where your two leading scorers in Quenisha Lockett and Sophie Ward are both sophomores. I think there is certainly hope for the future here for the Rockets. And a victory like this one that they got earlier tonight certainly helps people see that vision, right, of seeing progress towards what the Rockets might be next year and the year after that. So certainly a nice win for the Rockets on the road in Mount Pleasant against the Chippewas tonight. I also, for my women's performance of the week, I went with Kent State as a team. And, we talked a little bit earlier about that scheduling quirk of having 2 games in a row on the road, back-to-back days against the same team. Never happens in college basketball, but it happened here because of the previous game being postponed due to COVID. But, they had lost 3 in a row and 4 of 6 since they returned from their COVID pause. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that Northern Illinois was the hottest team in the conference coming into these 2 games. But Kent State figured out a way to do it. They held the Huskies to 38% field goals over the 2 games, 29% from 3-point range over those 2 games. Neela Blackford averaged 15 points in those 2 games. And they also, I mean, you want to talk about domination. Northern Illinois leads the conference in rebounding per game and rebounding margin. And the Golden Flash has out-rebounded the Northern Illinois by 19 rebounds across these 2 games. So a really nice concerted effort for the Golden Flashes on defense and on the boards. And I think that's the kind of performance they needed to get their season back on track as they're back up in 3rd place now heading into these last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, as we talked about, much needed wins. Now with the Buffalo win they just got, it's now 3 straight. Yep. So it's tough to really read where this Kent State program is at, because they were originally hot, then they down, and now they're back up. They've got 3 more games before the conference tournament. It's going to be exciting to watch this team, and I think each game you get a different Golden Flashes team each game, and I'm excited to watch this team because I think this may be one of the streakier teams in the MAC.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do come conference tournament time in Cleveland. Real quick, before we move into the what we're looking forward to this week, a couple games that are still finishing up on the women's side here tonight as we record on Wednesday. Northern Illinois currently with a 79-78 lead over Ball State with 1 minute left in that game. Looks like Western Michigan is going to pick up their 4th conference win of the season. They're currently up 64-55 over Eastern Michigan with 57 seconds left there. Elsewhere around the conference tonight, we talked about Toledo beating Central Michigan 72-67. Kent State knocked off Buffalo 65-62. The other game that we did not mention was Akron going to Oxford and knocking off Miami 84-63 to get their 3rd conference win of the year. So Sam, let's take a look at the week ahead here. We'll start on the men's side. Any games this week that you have kind of circled on your calendar that you're really looking forward to?
I'm excited for, I could go Bowling Green at Akron, but I'm going to go Buffalo at Ohio. I think this is a game to really watch because I think this could be a potential. I think this is a, right now would be a first round matchup
That's right. This would be the 4-5. Yeah.
And not only that, I think, like we said, Buffalo can beat anybody team, but this Ohio's team is just plays the right type of basketball that they can also beat anybody. So I'm really excited to watch that matchup.
I agree with you. I'm excited. Any Ohio game right now, I'm going to try and make an effort to watch because they are fun to watch. So that Buffalo game on Saturday will be a big one. I think Ohio at Kent next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. That'll be a big game as well. Kent State going to be looking to bounce back after that performance against Ball State here earlier today. And Ohio, you know, looking to move up a little bit in the standings and has Kent State right in front of them. So certainly could be a good game there. And then the other one I had on here was, yeah, Bowling Green and Akron on Saturday. I think this will be the true test for us to tell if Bowling Green truly is back. If you can go on the road to Akron and knock off the Zips in their home gym, then I'll start to consider the Falcons a problem again in this conference. We'll see what happens there. What about on the women's side, Sam? Any games in particular that you're looking forward to this week in women's hoops?
I'm gonna go the same exact matchup, but instead of being at Ohio, it's gonna be in Buffalo, and that's Ohio at Buffalo. It's another great matchup. I think similar to the men's side of things, either of these teams can beat you, and it's just going to be up to Daisha Vair versus CC Hooks who can win it. And that's my game I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with Northern Illinois at Western Michigan. That might seem like an odd choice being that, you know, how far Western Michigan is down in the standings. I believe they're in 11th place right now, not going to make the conference tournament. I'm just curious to see how Northern Illinois bounces back after losing those two games at home to Kent State over the weekend. They're locked in a dogfight with Ball State here tonight. So if they can pick up a win here tonight and get the 10 wins, I don't think they'll have any problem with Western Michigan on Saturday. However, you know, I think if you lose again tonight to Ball State in another close game, you might start to have some confidence issues for the Huskies. And in that case, I could see this being a dicey one going into Kalamazoo to take on the Broncos. The only other one I had on here was Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan. Michaela Kelly obviously playing at a very high level, got a rivalry game there. Eastern Michigan, similar kind of bounce back spot to what I just mentioned with Northern Illinois. They got knocked off by Western Michigan here tonight in another rivalry game. So Eastern Michigan there in a bounce back spot. And I guess Central Michigan is as well after that disappointing loss to Toledo earlier tonight.
And one quick thing to mention, the last two times Central Michigan at Eastern Michigan played this season, Eastern Michigan actually knocked off Central Michigan in an away game. So this is a big deal breaker for Central Michigan, not only in a rivalry game, but as you said, bounce back game. Also, you don't want to get swept by one of your rivals. You don't want to get really swept by anybody. It's going to be a fun matchup to watch.
Yeah, no, you're certainly right about that. That's a great point. Kind of got the revenge factor playing into that one as well. Folks, with that, you know, kind of wrap it up with, you know, looking at the week ahead here. I think that's going to do it for us here this week on the Mac bandwagon. Sam, anything we missed? Anything? Any final words? Anything for the good of the people?
I don't think so. I think what we said was pretty true. I liked all the games that we had this weekend. They were a lot of fun to watch, from the Ball State game to the Ohio Akron game. I'm hoping we get more this upcoming week.
I'm with you there. It is a great time of the year. Love the last couple weeks of the college hoop season heading into the conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. I'm pumped for all of it, especially after not getting any of it that last year. So, thank you all for stopping by tonight. As always, we appreciate you guys stopping by and listening. This has been episode 34 of the Mac Bandwagon Podcast. I am Zach Folador. He is Sam Filman. We'll talk to you guys next week.